This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5, and Intelsat 39, and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English programme, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
A year ago today, the Israeli regime celebrated one of the most perverse acts of sabotage and terrorism the world has ever witnessed. Large-scale targeting of Lebanese civilians through pager and walkie-talkie explosions. Attacks that left at least 40 people dead and nearly 3,500 wounded. Israeli leadership claims operation was a target Hezbollah resistance members, yet devices detonated anywhere and everywhere, from family dinner tables to crowded markets, shops, public transportation, parks, schools, and even an embassy. What the occupation called an achievement the world saw as a reckless and shameful destructive act, along with litany of other criminal acts that have defined the Zionist regime for over 75 years. The Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem today said Israel failed and continues to fail to take resistance fighters off the battlefield, and this is the focus of our Spotlight program. But first, here's a quick report.
Lebanon marks 1 year since a series of Israeli-coordinated explosions targeted Hezbollah's communication devices across the country. Thousands of pagers detonated simultaneously on September 17, 2024, followed by the explosion of numerous walkie-talkies the next day. Several countries slammed the attack as a terror attack, with the United Nations condemning it as a terrifying violation of international law, citing their indiscriminate nature. The two-day assault left at least 40 people dead and more than 3,400 injured, including children and civilians caught near the devices.
We even know that in war there is something called the ethics of war, but the enemy went beyond all of these things. He didn't think that the pager would be in the hands of children. We witnessed that there were many wounded children and women who had nothing to do with this matter.
Marking the anniversary, Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem delivered a televised address honoring the victims of the attacks as pioneers of insight and symbols of eternal devotion.
You are at the higher level and know that Israel will fall because its occupation, injustice, criminality and aggression, and because the resistance fighters are confronting it until liberation on the path to either of the two. And this is a permanent victory.
As Lebanon marks 1 year since the attack, the scars remain and so does the resolve. Despite the Lebanese government's U.S.-backed efforts to disarm Hezbollah movement, the resistance insists its weapons are not a threat to peace, but a shield against occupation and threats. Israel's continued strikes, even after a ceasefire agreement established in November 2024, proved that surrendering to the regime's demand will not bring security. From Gaza to Lebanon, the resistance sees itself not as a destabilizing force, but as the last line of defense for dignity, sovereignty, and survival.
And now for our guests. Joining us, Mr. Mohammed Qassem, academic and political analyst, joining us from Beirut. and Arnold August, author and journalist and contributing editor at Canada Files, joining us from Montreal. Hello, gentlemen. Pleasure to have you both on. I guess we'll start there in Beirut with you, Mr. Qasem. Good to have you join the program. Your first take on how you remember last year's pager attacks by the Israeli occupation entity in Lebanon.
I think that the Israelis had the intention of doing such an action before, years ago, and they were preparing for this massacre against the Lebanese. But they did choose the special time to activate it. Because Israel has many motives for doing such an action. The first of all, they had found that the resistance had been so powerful and were able to attack and support Gaza. That's why they wanted to cripple the resistance command control and the coordinating systems. This is one. The second motive that Israel wanted of this war is that they were trying to make a kind of psychological warfare by instilling fear and paranoia. And in this way, they would break the morale and they make a kind of mistrust of the equipment that the resistance is using. And they were trying also to reduce the operational efficiency of the resistance. Another motive of Israel was to deter against escalation. You know, at that time, the Lebanese resistance was ready to go forward and to proceed with the support of Gaza, but the escalation that the resistance was doing had a great effect on Israel. That's why the Israelis wanted to make a kind of deterrence against the escalation, especially with the rockets that the resistance were using, the missiles and other forms. Also, it was a kind of a message to Iran and to the region, and it is to show them that they are superior in technology as well as superior in intelligence. You know, it is also, to some extent, it is kind of a field test, infiltration, and they wanted to show that this action can be done. But another message that Israel was trying to do is a message for the internal situation of Israel. It is a kind of a domestic message for protests. You know, at that time, there were many protests and the political divisions that were taking place at that time, and the criticism over the massacres that Israel was doing against Gaza. And this was also trying to calm the division inside Israel, and they wanted to tell them that we are making all our abilities to to succeed in that. But
thank you.
Would that be enough for them, or was it a main reason for this escalation? I think that the 17th of September, which we consider as it is the war of pagers, and walkie-talkie on the second day. That's we call it here in Lebanon. It is the anniversary of the recovery. Mm. Our slogan today is that we recovered. This is what the injured had said all Thank over you. The country. And this Mr. slogan Kassim, allow me to... had been proven during Kassim. The demonstration.
During the demonstration that was made. Mr. Qasem, please, we don't have much time. I want to have both of you speak. Mr. Arnold August, thank you for your patience, sir. Good to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure.
If you remember, this time last year, after this attack, Israeli leadership, they laughed, they danced, they paraded around as if they pulled off what? The most genius operation of the century. Many saw the very exact opposite. How did you see it?
Well, I think what you're saying and the previous speaker saying, the main goal, I think, was while U.S. and Israel were losing the war in Gaza as well as in Lebanon, that specific attack was aimed to try to show once again the superiority of the U.S.-Israeli war machine being used to carry out the Holocaust. And, of course, what they not only they did it, you saw it dancing in the streets, but it also had wide diplomatic implications when various representatives of Israel visited other countries, for example, in Washington, D.C., on live camera, they made jokes. How would you like to have a pager on you? I mean, there are many examples how they actually made jokes of the slaughter that took place against the Lebanese people by the U.S.-backed Israeli armed forces. But I think 1 year later, did they succeed in intimidating the resistance movement? No. Did they succeed in stifling the opposition within Israel, even though it is limited to Netanyahu? No, it has actually increased. The resistance has increased, and the opposition within Israel by the so-called, you know, liberal wing of Zionism has also increased. And despite its limitations, it acts as a very important stop or a way to hold Netanyahu accountable, even though we're not seeing. Resistance has definitely increased, and so has the opposition within Israel increased as well. Israel, in fact, is falling apart at the seams. We have to be patient. I am sure in the coming weeks and months, it eventually is going to fall apart because of the economic problems, the contradictions within Zionism, and the opposition U.S. Zionist attack against the Palestinian people. It does not go down well at all with the Israeli population, even though they had that spectacular success in Lebanon a year ago with those pagers.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Qasem, if any other government or regime on this planet was to carry out a similar reckless act like this, where civilians are in the direct line of fire and in imminent danger, the tag of state sponsor of terrorism would be put upon them, followed by sanctions and repercussions. Leadership would be held to account. But with this regime, we see a prime minister running around the world, giving, I'm sure you've seen golden pagers to Western politicians as mementos to celebrate this brazen act of terrorism. Your thoughts on the double standards when it comes to the Israeli regime?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear well. The line is not functioning well. But what did I understand of what your question is? The government's reaction to this war of pagers. This is if it is like that, I will say that unfortunately our government was not in that suitable position. The negligence and not any effort was done by the government and by the official institutions in Lebanon to face such a catastrophe when we have not less than 20
dead people, martyrs, and about 3,000 wounded, and they were left open to the initiatives of people, or initiatives of some social workers or some doctors who had been volunteers to do the job. That's why they were left for their environment or for their society, and unfortunately, the wounded, they had very big and very critical time with no one to help except some initiatives done by some social organizations or local organizations that the people did. That's why when we see that we have injuries, wounded in their eyes, in their hands, in their abdomens, in their lungs, in their waist, all these, they needed special care. They needed medical operations and so on. It took a long time to be adjusted to that, and it is good that we have the institutions related to the resistance that was also supporting with some other organizations that they did. But here we can say that we are praising the initiatives of the doctors, of the nurses, of the working of health care and so on, and their reaction to this. And this was so good that it helped in making the loss less. Mm. That's why they were with no equipments, no surgical equipments, and so on. But it passed, and now by 1 year, we can see that these wounded people are now completely different persons. They are militants. They are proud of themselves. We will talk about that, I think, in the other question. But we are so proud of these people who were wounded, and they are around 3,000. Their demonstration today was so great that they were walking proudly. They were saying that, okay, we have lost our eyes or hands or fingers or ribs or and so on, but we rehabilitated ourselves. We are now adjusting to our situations. Some of them are now working. Some of them did marry. Others were studying in the universities. Some others are working as social workers and in different fields. And they had been changed, or they are completely changed from one person to another. They are more active in the society now. And they said that we have lost some of our parts, but we are more involved in our country's problems and issues, and we should proceed in our track of resistance. They are now proving that they are a new resistance people who are able to face all the obstacles of life in a very self-confident situation.
Thank you, sir.
I would like to say that.
Can I ask, Mr.
It is a
August.
Kind of another form of.
Thank you. Let me just say, Mr. Arnold August. So when you put last year's pager attacks, and then the war that followed, and you put it next to the ceasefire in November 27th, and the thousands upon thousands of ceasefire violations, the continued occupation by Israel of Lebanese soil up until this very day, how do you find the pretext or the justification to speak of disarming Hezbollah in Lebanon or the Amal or any resistance faction in the region when you realize who you're up against?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's complete double standard. They, you know, brazenly talk about disarming Hamas, talking about recognizing a new Palestinian state, but without Hamas. In other words, give up your arms, they are saying to Hamas. And what does that mean in real terms? Just to facilitate the Holocaust that has been going on in recent times since October 7, 2023, and as well as from right from the beginning, from 1948. You asked whether any other countries have carried out such a brazen attack against individual citizens as was carried out by Israel with the pager attacks. From as far as I know, no. I don't think there's been anything like it. However, we have to ask the following question. Is the guilty party only Netanyahu, a wild card Netanyahu? I think it would be wrong for us to think that the problem in the Middle East is Netanyahu. The problem in the Middle East is U.S. full, unconditional support for Israel, including, for example, the pager attack that took place, on all of the other attacks that took place, for example, against Iran, against the Palestinian people. Like right now as we speak, they're also occupying and arresting people in the occupied bank, trying to take over Gaza City. This is the reality of the situation. The pager incident is just part of U.S.-Israeli policy in the United States to eliminate the Palestinian people. Yes.
And the U.S. today is pushing the Ayoun government to basically try to disarm Hezbollah in Lebanon.
That's terrible. I mean, I'm sure the Lebanese people, knowing personally from people who live there, militants, intellectuals, etc., including who you're on TV today, there's no way the Lebanese people will give up their arms because the United States and Israel wants them to give up arms. On the contrary, what is happening and what is going to happen is that the Lebanese people will rise once again. Just as George Abbas, after spending all those years in prison, he came back undefeated in Beirut as a hero because he stands up for the Palestinian people. This is Lebanon. They will not give up arms. They will keep on fighting against the United States and Israel.
And I really want to put that same question to Mr. Mohammad Qasem. Mr. Mohammad Qasem, this case that the U.S. is trying to make and give these guarantees, it knows it cannot give to Beirut to disarm Hezbollah. When you look at Israel's track record over the last 40 years in Lebanon, over the last 75 years in Palestine, how do you justify disarming the resistance?
I think the Lebanese government, and especially the prime minister, is doing a very fatal action. And the ministry, the whole ministry had taken a very dramatic as well as a very dangerous decision that they are trying or they are working on disarming the resistance as well as disarming the Palestinians. What we know of this, there are many motives for that. The disarming means what? It is, first of all, they are trying to break down all the power that the Lebanese had gained for years and years and had paid for that, thousands of martyrs, as well as suffering and troubles all over years, economically, socially, security, and so on. This minister now, or the prime minister, who is insisting and trying to pull the legs of all the cabinet or the ministers in order to force this kind of disarmament. The disarmament means that they wanted us to be open to the enemy. And this is according to what Trump says or orders, and why, and this is what Ortegas as well as Barack had planned and are trying to do that. If we take a kind of statistics or a kind of asking a poll within the Lebanese, there was a very neutral poll was done by more than one institution. It proved that there are still, even with these casualties and destruction and occupying of five villages and still the Israelis are in the south, there are more than 60 to 65% of the Lebanese population who refuse or who asks the resistance not to give their arms to the government. And they said that we are still feeling or we are in need of this weapon to face the
cruelty and the massacres that Israel had done. While I'm talking to you now, a kind of air raid had been made against Baalbek, which is so far more than 200 to 300 kilometers from the borders to the north of Lebanon, and they had killed more than one martyr. This is, I don't know what the Prime Minister wants on insisting of disarming or taking the army of the resistance. It means one thing to a logical person who says that why you signed for a treaty where the first item of this is the withdrawal of the enemy, leaving the villages that had been occupied, releasing the hostages, rebuilding the destroyed or the destructed houses, and then we discuss the disarming, or at least to a strategic policy of Lebanon, especially according to the defense strategy. Why are you insisting only on disarming the resistance? It means he is under the orders of the United States and Israel as well.
Thank you, both of you, sincerely for joining us on the program. It was a pleasure to have you both on. Mr. Mohammed Qasim, they're joining us from Beirut, and also Mr. Arnold August joining us from Montreal. It brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history. Imam Khamenei. The most important element of unity is the existence of Muhammad, peace be upon him. We say that the holy existence of the great Prophet and Messenger of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, is the most important point in creating unity. He is superior to other prophets in terms of morality and nature. And he is peerless in terms of knowledge and generosity. And all of them beseech the Messenger of God to grant them a drop from his infinite sea and a drip of his boundless and immeasurable rain. The holy existence of the Messenger of God is the summit of the world and the best spot in the universe in the true sense of the word. The Holy Quran has referred to itself as light. One of the words that the Holy Quran uses to describe itself is light. God has indeed sent upon you light and the book. The Holy Quran, chapter 5, verse 15. The Holy Quran is light. One of the esteemed wives of the Holy Prophet was asked to describe him, and she said in response, "The Holy Quran is in his nature." This means that he was the living Quran, so he was light as well. Light is a means of providing brightness and ensuring the life of humans. The Holy Prophet, too, is a means of providing brightness and ensuring the life of human societies. There are things that humanity will reach gradually. The holy existence of the Messenger of God is a source of light in the true sense of the word. An Arab poet says, "Guidance was born and light has imbued all creatures." This is really the truth of the matter. and time is smiling and uttering words of praise. I hope that the world of Islam will be like this as well. I hope that the world of Islam smiles on the birthday anniversary of the Holy Prophet, that it will not suffer from sorrow and grief. This is our dream. I have written down three points to discuss with you. One is about Unity Week. We in the Islamic Republic have named this week, starting from the 12th of Rabi'ul Awwal and lasting until the 17th of Rabi'ul Awwal, as Unity Week. Such naming is not just for the sake of it, and it is not a political and tactical move either. Rather, such naming is based on the belief and heartfelt faith.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security. A superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was a DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America.
In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. They needed new heroes to shout their demands out loud. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and would never understand their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands.
That's why these children are practicing to...
Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation. As he was repelled by society, he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero and the most popular one during the period was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider. Marvel introduced other heroes like Ant-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men with the same principles. Marvel's new heroes were nervous, complicated characters with a list of deficiencies whose human aspects were magnified and were distinguished from the flawless characters before. The baby boom generation changed society. Following social injustices, the Vietnam War, racism, and the assassination of their popular president Kennedy, the generation triggered a social revolution and questioned American values and causes. During those years, the Cold War reached its pinnacle. The Soviet influence in Vietnam increased, and the U.S. did not want to lag behind the rivalry. People in the U.S. took to the streets to protest the Vietnam War. But the most important superhero in the hero-making industry in the U.S., concurrent with the Vietnam War, was Iron Man, whose real name was Tony Stark. The Vietnam War, with its huge casualties and costs, was one of the shameful decisions in the eyes of Americans, and the opposition had snowballed. Society needed to be convinced. Someone had to sympathize with the people who had lost their sons and daughters. It was Iron Man who was tasked to do so. In the 1960s, he initially supported the U.S. Army's involvement in the Vietnam War, arguing that the U.S. will make a lot of money selling weapons.
For your consideration,
but gradually, he faced many changes. He was increasingly disillusioned with U.S. foreign policy. In the mid-1970s, he expressed remorse for the deaths of people who were killed by the weapons that he made and said he will take revenge for the people who lost their lives, especially for ignorant people like himself.
I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them. And I saw that I had become part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability.
Hey, Ben. What happened over there?
I had my eyes open. I came to realize that I have more to offer this world than just making things to blow up. And that is why, effective immediately, I am shutting down the weapons manufacturer division Stoker & Nelson until such a time as I can decide what the future of this company will be, what direction it should take, one that I'm comfortable with and is consistent with the highest.
The change in his character was a symbol of change in American society that had become aware of its own identity. The enemies of the superheroes were no longer the Germans, Japanese, communists, or any other foreign entity. The main enemy was inside the United States. During this period, the protest by people of color against racial discrimination spread. Leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. turned into the symbols of resistance against the U.S. structure. The protests were at their highest after the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. The incidents made Marvel create its first black character named the Black Panther. The scandal caused by President Richard Nixon, his resignation, and high inflation and unemployment rates made things worse.
In Washington, a break-in at the Watergate Hotel was found to involve five men in the pay of the committee to re-elect President Nixon. The burglar's target was the office of the chairman of the Democratic Party. The story was to make the names of two young local reporters from the Washington Post.
The catastrophe following Nixon's corruption case and the Watergate scandal gripped American rulers by the collar. They had realized that public opinion needed to calm down. And just like in the past, the superheroes were the best options. In one of the comic stories in this period, Captain America, with his fake copy, namely the Captain America in the 1950s, who fought for the U.S. Army, tells himself, "I've never fought with my own demonic part. A man with patriotic dreams, I'm responsible for the evil he did." Captain America was fighting with a sinister empire that wanted to take control of the U.S. In the end, he captured head of the White House, and by removing his mask, he realized the U.S. president was the head of the evil group. The story is about disgraced Nixon administration. This time, unlike the previous times, the captain didn't become happy after achieving victory, and he abandons the fight. He loses faith in Americans and chooses to become a stateless man. He says, "I've done things that I don't take pride in anymore, but I always tried to serve my country well. Now I can see that the government is serving itself." The bitter taste of those days made Spider-Man stories bitter. Something rare happened in Spider-Man. Mary Jane, Spider-Man's fiancée, was killed in a fight. Spider-Man blamed himself for Mary Jane's death and never stopped reprimanding himself following the incident. It was similar to how Americans felt about their government. Marvel adopted this line and made social criticism in its stories. DC also tried to become aligned with social developments to some extent. So, it introduced a real hero against the power structure in America in its stories. He was the greatest and the eternal boxer, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali won the Olympic gold medal at the age of 20. He was always against the government because of the oppression against the black community. And because of his stance, he didn't join the army so he wouldn't be forced to fight for the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Muhammad Ali was a symbol of resistance against U.S. dominance, and he had become an international figure. And DC used the popular hero. In one of the stories, Superman, who's a symbol of America, was defeated by Muhammad Ali in a boxing bout. Later, they made up a team to save the planet from aliens. In the end, Muhammad Ali wins in a boxing competition against the aliens, and Earth was saved. The pictorial story became the best-selling comic in the late 1970s. After Ronald Reagan took office in the 1980s, he made the government smaller but expanded the army. The conflict with the Soviets escalated, and American citizens' nationalistic support boosted thanks to professional media techniques. Reagan, who was formerly a movie star, knew very well how to act like a hero. Amid the Soviet threats and the Cold War, many people were scared of widespread crime. The Reagan administration was an avid proponent of individualism and consumerism, while the population was more scared of the violence. In Night of Darkness, there's a character of the president in the city of Gotham. It shows a cartoon of Reagan and his nationalistic speech.
Brave American forces are now engaged in direct combat with Soviet troops in Corto Maltese. Now those Soviets would like to see us turn our tails and run. But we've got to protect our interest. I mean, stand up for freedom. So don't you fret. We've got God on our side. Or the next best thing, anyway.
While his city was about to collapse because of injustice. In the real world, on December 22, 1984, a citizen from New York named Bernard Goetz shot thieves with four bullets to defend himself. People sympathized with him, and the court that had already indicted Goetz acquitted him. He became the symbol of a person who has provided security and safety for himself in a chaotic world. He saved himself through his acts of violence. The situation provided comic books with sufficient ammo and new characters stepped in. In response to the world of violence, three characters, namely Punisher, Daredevil, and Logan, torture their enemies through the most violent methods and would kill them after they lost a lot of blood.
Aquí Teherán, la voz de la República Islámica.